Et Naim, Nikki Yasam Hilo, Nikki Machuptamaidu. Hello, everyone. My name is Hilo, and I'm Machuptamaidu. We acknowledge and are mindful that Chico State stands on lands that were originally occupied by the first people of this area, the Machupta, and we recognize their distinctive spiritual relationship with this land and the waters that run through campus. We are humbled that our campus resides upon sacred lands that have sustained the Machupta people for centuries and continue to do so today.
Okay, Teresa, we are recording. Wait, Teresa's not with us today, so I'll do the introductions. Welcome to another episode of First Generation, One of Many. And unfortunately, yes, Teresa was called away for another meeting at this time, but we do have a wonderful episode lined up with three amazing guests. And I am Josh Whittinghill, one of the co-hosts. That pause was so Teresa could throw in there. Hi, I'm Teresa. And the mission of our podcast is to create an archive of discussions with and about first generation student experiences in and out of the classroom. We hope to continue raising awareness, understanding, provide voice for students and alum, as well as present resources for faculty, staff, and students working for and collaborating with first generation students. All right, and in tradition with every episode, we have some quotes for the day that reflect our topic. And the first quote comes from Tonya Crissel, an author who writes about the experience for foster parents in the system, saying, "You might be temporary in their lives. They might be temporary in yours, but there is nothing temporary about the love or the lesson." So that is the first quote. And the second quote comes from Charlena E. Jackson in her recently released book, Pinwheels and Dandelions. I thought to myself, time was never on my side. After all this, it was, because it led me to the right place at the right time. And so those two reflect some experiences for people who have been part of the foster care system in the United States. And that is our topic for today. And like I said, we have three amazing guests to help shed insight and some light and some and keep the discussion going around what they're doing and what is happening inside the foster care system and outside the foster care system for people once they leave the system. All right. Our first guest is Benito Gutierrez. Benito is a PATH scholar and transfer student from Butte College. He is a humanities major and has been on the dean's list with a 4.0 GPA this last semester. As a former foster youth, Benito experienced group home placements and the criminal justice system and is passionate about helping others successfully navigate similar challenges. He started the program Ascending Scholars at Butte College and is working on starting Project Rebound at Chico State, both with the goal of supporting students transition successfully from incarceration to reaching their higher education goals. Hello, Benito. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's going to be great to hear some of your story and what you're doing. It all sounds great so far from what I've heard and learned a little bit from our other guests today, Dawn and Marina. So next up, we have Dawn Carini. Dawn claims Willows, California as her hometown. And a shout out, go Honkers. Dawn is a first generation college graduate raised in the small town. She obtained her BA in psychology at Chico State in 2005 and came back for her master's in social work, graduating in 2009. After over a decade working in the child welfare setting and 3 years teaching social work at Chico State, Dawn followed her love of Chico State and her passion for helping former foster youth overcome challenges to reach their higher goals in education by joining the PATH Scholars team as an advisor in 2020. She works with some of the most amazing students and loves collaborating with others on campus to make sure students are connected, supported, and ready to slay their goals. Welcome, Dawn.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. It's great to see you again. It has been a while. We used to see each other weekly, and now it's been almost 2 months. So it's nice to see your smiling face again.
You as well.
Thanks. And our third guest, if it sounds familiar, then that's great. That means you listened to episode 3. I am who I say I am. And our guest is Marina Lomeli Fox, making a return visit. Hi, Marina.
Hola, good to be here.
Yeah. So to remind folks, Marina Lomeli Fox is a local from Butte County, the hometown of, in quotes from her, good old Gridley. Her parents were immigrants from Mexico, and like many families, wanted to start a better life in the United States for their children. Marina is first-generation college student and the only one in her family to get a college degree. A Chico State and EOP alum, she earned a bachelor's degree in social work in 1998 and returned years later, obtaining her master's in social work at Chico State in 2015. Currently, Marina is the program coordinator for PATH Scholars, which is Chico State's campus support program for students with a foster care and or unaccompanied homeless experience. All right, so let's get to this. And first, we wanted to share some facts from iFoster.org and the Children's Home Society, which collects and shares data on what's happening in the foster care system throughout the United States. So last year, 2020, according to their data, there were approximately 425,000 kids in the United States foster care system. The average age of a foster child was 6.5 years old. Over 20,000 foster kids aged out of the foster care system between the ages of 18 and 21 each year. And many of them are left to find a way to support themselves without help from an adoptive family. And as a result, many of these people find themselves homeless and unemployed for extended periods. And 70% of foster kids would like to go to college. However, in 2020, only about 3% of foster youth who aged out of the foster care system earned a college degree up until the year 2020. And 1 in 4 foster kids won't graduate high school or earn a GED. 1 in 2 who age out of the foster care system claim to have a substance dependence. And according to Adoption Network in the United States, 1 in 3 people consider adopting at some point in their life, but only about 2% follow through. Wow. So to share with listeners, if you're not familiar, these are some very important facts, some staggering data on what is happening around us. And many of us aren't aware quite often of people's experience, background, and situations of where they're coming from and what they're trying to achieve. So we're going to hear a little bit from all of you first before we get into some more of the personal questions and sharing. But Dawn and Marina, can you help share with us what is PATH Scholars and what does PATH stand for?
Okay, I'll go. but I did want to say that just hearing all those statistics and information, it always just really confirms why we have this program and why it's so important. So to talk about PATH Scholars, as you mentioned, PATH Scholars is a campus support program. And so really our goal is to help students get to college, stay here for their 4 to 6 years or however long it takes, and then to graduate, to really increase that 3% number. And so I think we've been pretty successful with our students and, you know, just really helping them in all kinds of areas. You know, finances is such a major part of it. You know, typically students will have, you know, their parent to say, oh, an emergency came up or something, you know, can you send me $100 or my car broke down or, you know, all these different needs. And, you know, our student group doesn't really have that option. And so we have resources to support with that. You know, they receive priority registration through PATH Scholars so that they can be assured that they get the classes that they need, the schedule that they need, you know, to work around their work schedule, because most of the time our students are working to supplement their financial aid. You know, really, I think it's about removing barriers, and students will come to us and say, you know, this is happening, I don't know what to do. And then we can help, you know, brainstorm and connect them to resources and, you know, just make it so that their academics is really their primary focus. And so, yeah, just supporting them in any way we can just to get through, you know, what's happening, classes, and then ultimately to graduate.
Great. Now, you say all of those things and it sounds great. And it sounds like you're promoting achievement through hope. Is that what you're doing?
That's absolutely what PATH stands for. So a lot of, as some of the listeners may have heard, other programs that, you know, the CSUs and UCs and community colleges, typically the programs are called Guardian Scholars. I think that's the kind of the primary name. There's some different ones, Renaissance Scholars at Butte College, they have Inspiring Scholars. When this program started in 2014, for me personally, I didn't love the name Guardian Scholars. And so I took it to the students, and the students that were involved at that time, they actually voted, and promoting achievement through hope was one of the ideas from a student at that time. And that's what the students picked. So that's how we came up with the name.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I want to, for me, I hadn't really learned much about former foster youth, unaccompanied adults experiences, and didn't really know that I was working with students for a while, because they weren't really just coming in and saying, hey, Josh, this is my experience, because there wasn't a program on campus. And I was able to be part of trying to get this started at some point. Oh, let me get, my office phone is calling. Hold on a second. And I was able to be part of trying to get it to go on campus, and it didn't work out. The funding source at the time, they had so many applications and programs already in place. They decided not to fund any new programs that year. And then thankfully, within about a year and a half or so after that, campus was able to get you on board, Marina, and really get this moving. And thankfully to you, I know I have learned tremendous amount about how to be a better supporter and advocate, ally, and friend for students who come in to campus with former foster youth experiences and being unaccompanied adults. And the campus in general, I think, even the word, when I talk to people who I don't even know are doing things like, oh yeah, I was meeting with Marina recently, or oh, PATH Scholars, is what is PATH Scholars all about? Because I've seen it, but I want to know more. So the program has been amazing on campus to get the word out and to help, like you, like Dawn's quote from her bio, to really collaborate across campus to make sure that students are getting the support they need. Because as we know, and you've taught me, and a lot of other students in PATH Scholars have taught me, that for them, asking for help is always one of the barriers that keeps them from achieving some of their goals, because they have learned throughout the years to take care of themselves and to be self-sufficient. And now they're learning to build that trust among people they don't even know, but that we're here to help them, support them, and be sure that they are getting their needs and their wants and their goals achieved. Dawn, did you want to add anything about past scholars?
I just wanted to add that having worked in child welfare for years and seeing those statistics every year that come out about how our students are doing as they leave high school and head into college, hopefully if things go well, it makes me think about some of my students who were really amazing and so bright. And we tend to think about, you know, when we hear negative statistics about that, that is an attribute of the folks that we're talking about, that that's something that they did wrong, or there's a stigma around that population. And really, if you think about the trauma that was experienced as they were coming into care, right? So something that caused them to be in contact with the child welfare system and come into foster care, or to find themselves without housing and without adult support. Those are things that really impact their ability. It impacts their brain formation and how they're able to walk through their schooling. Maybe they have lots of different placement moves, even, you know, in high school, and getting put into different high schools can have a lot of impacts on whether you're able to progress towards college. And so just thinking about the system that impacts their ability to get to those places where they're able to get to college in the first place, but then to be able to persist in college. And so supports are needed on both ends as they're coming into college. There needs to be someone that's kind of handing them off to these support programs that are available at the colleges, and then continuing with them, even though we think about them as young adults, they have gone through so much during their formative years. They just need that extra boost to kind of help them catch up to their peers, because there has been so much missed and so many things that they're working through as they're coming into that phase of life.
Yeah, thanks for adding that. That's great. All right. Now, and you mentioned support systems and students coming in and learning. So let's hear from Benito. Been so patiently in the sidelines there in your high-tech studio for the day. But you have two programs that you have started. One is already going, and one you're working on currently getting going is Ascending Scholars at Butte College and Project Rebound at Chico State. Can you share a little bit about those two programs and what they do?
Well, these two programs, they are meant to serve formerly incarcerated students and system impacted students. So anyone who has had a family member, a parent who is incarcerated, and many of us are also foster youth. And so, yeah, the intention is to help guide people coming out of these situations through the college experience. And, you know, there are hurdles, you know, as Marina mentioned, there are hurdles that many of us were not able to call a parent or to rely on some other resources. And so it's just a great way to find camaraderie and help each other out through the college experience.
Excellent. And the one at Butte College, how long has that one been up and running over there?
Since 2019, it's been established, and it's continuing to grow.
Okay. And are you still able to be connected with it, or did you have to pass it on to people over at Butte College to take care of?
I was fortunate enough to pass it on that there were people, you know, who were willing to step up and continue, you know, the legacy. And so, yeah, I'm very, very blessed to have been a part of it.
Yeah, that's wonderful, because we do know that community colleges have a different pool of students that come in and have different needs, concerns, as opposed to a four-year school. Sometimes the number of students who come in with different hurdles, as you've referenced, the percentage of that can be a little bit smaller at the four-year school, but you see the need, and you have the ability. So what's Project Rebound look like currently?
We just finished writing the Constitution. We've been meeting, we've been scheduling Zooms. We're just still trying to establish a foothold at the college. So we need to start as a club first before we can transition into a program, but we're in the early stages of planning, but we're receiving a lot of assistance, a lot of support from the school. And so it's primed to be ready.
Awesome. Yeah. That's going to be exciting to see what you're able to accomplish and what it does.
For sure. Thank you.
Yeah. So Benito, you joined us today to share some of that, but also We were talking beforehand, so it'd be great for listeners to hear a little bit of what you're willing to share on your experience of going into foster care and then through that experience to where you're at today.
Well, my experience through the foster care system, I would say is pretty typical for the guys that I knew growing up. It wasn't a positive situation. So I was, you know, I grew up born in Chico, but I grew up in South Modesto with little supervision and, you know, wanting to fit in with the kids down there and to have my voice heard. I began to act out. And as a result of my behavior and a lack of guidance, I found myself into the system, you know, first with various group homes, age 12, you know, they're sending me to group homes in Salinas and in Placerville and Sacramento and Stockton. It was like a revolving door for me because I'd get there and it would be a terrible situation. So I'd run away. And this lasted through my early teens until they eventually sent me to the California Youth Authority, just like a prison for kids. And then eventually after that, prison. And it's an experience that I felt, you know, was my own and was very natural to me. And I didn't think any different, you know, of it, or never really judged myself for it or compared myself at other people's experience to mine. And I really haven't given it much thought, and I didn't know that there was a place for me until I got to Butte College and I actually got in touch with Inspiring Scholars over there. It's like the equivalent of PATH at Chico State. And I found this group of people who've had similar experiences as mine, you know, and just to find the camaraderie and the support to keep going through this educational journey, it's been invaluable.
Yeah, thanks for sharing those details. I think it's important that listeners do understand that they're not alone if they're hearing this and it's something they're experiencing. And then also for all of us who are working in higher education and also in our communities and around, that there, you know, people have these different experiences. And if we do meet someone who shares that with us, how can we then be there for what they need or how they want us to support them at that time?
Yes.
So that's very important to share. So thank you doing that. Yeah. And so you all kind of touched on this a little bit, but let's dive in a little bit more. It seems to be a common theme for a lot of our discussions on episodes when we talk about certain people's experiences and intersections of being first generation and the idea of how important language is, right? And names and identities, labels, they all carry a certain power that people, whether you've experienced that or you haven't, there's some sort of understanding you may have or some way you may hear a phrase and you think of a certain thing when you hear it. So if you hear former foster youth or unaccompanied adult or foster care system, things may come into people's minds. And so unfortunately, quite often those labels are missing the true experience that people have had that have grown through those experiences. So and you touched on it, but what are some specific myths or stereotypes that you see surrounding former foster youth and unaccompanied adults that you know people should realize are not the truth?
Is that a question for me? I'll go.
Sure.
For sure, there's this idea that a person coming from that system they're responsible for coming out of that system. Like they're responsible for their circumstances and for being in foster care in the first place. There's also a misconception that they are unwanted, unlovable, uneducated, you know, pretty much a lost cause. But from the scholars that I've met, from the past scholars that I've met, take my case, for instance. Like I just made the dean's list. I didn't even know what a dean's list was. you know, and so, and like, certainly while I take responsibility for like my negative actions, the crimes I've committed in my past, like I did not create my circumstances, and I'm a product of those circumstances, but we're definitely not a lost cause. And especially with people like Donna Marina who support us at the school, like we're just so capable of anything we put our minds and hearts to.
I just wanted to say, first of all, I'm so proud of Benito and several of our students who are absolutely rocking it in a difficult time for all students, but especially for students who have experienced isolation outside of the pandemic, who maybe didn't have those support people in their life prior to that, and maybe going back to situations that are challenging in the pandemic in ways that that other students might not be experiencing. And I think about the blaming, right? So we victim blame a lot in our society. And so students who are coming to us from a foster care background, there's a tendency to think, you know, well, what's wrong with this person, or why did they end up in that system? And even those that end up in correctional systems like group homes or going into the criminal justice system, a lot of times they're a product of things that have happened in their life, whether that's trauma that causes them to act out in ways that, you know, as society, we feel like we need to react by controlling or fixing rather than really looking at the cause that's underlying those behaviors. I think that it's amazing to me just coming through those systems and finding ways not only, you know, for Benito to find his own path into college, but then turning around and reaching his hand out to support those that are coming in behind him, because he knows what that feels like and he has an idea of how he can best support them. And so I think that's a huge need, is to understand that these are things that have happened to our students, and regardless of that, if they have the right supports, they're absolutely going to make waves in their future and go into amazing careers and help others.
Yeah, Marina, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add, because Benito and Don really took the words out of my mouth, a lot of what they said. But yeah, just to add that, you know, I'm blown away by Benito and everything he's doing. You know, in spite of everything he went through, you know, growing up, and the choices that he's making now, and, you know, really trailblazing, you know, to create these programs for other students, and really to remove a lot of that stigma too. And so, you know, we do see that a lot with our students. They're remarkable. They, you know, they're so capable and, you know, have so many great ideas, and they're graduating and, you know, going off and doing the most incredible things. Just I couldn't be more proud of our students and everything they accomplished. So.
Yeah, and I have to share and reflect on Marina's background for our Zoom recording today. It reflects just how lively the Path Scholars Center, the location they have on the Chico State campus. It's an image of six or seven or so students hanging out in their space. Some are having lunch. Some are working on the computer doing something. One person's taking a nap to rest up for the rest of their day. I mean, it just shows the spectrum and the variety of what they provide in that center. So it will be something, I think, as Dawn mentioned, people experiencing the isolation can be a little bit more intense for the students who are part of Path Scholars. And so it'll be a wonderful part for them to be able to get back if they're in town to be able to touch base. Because I think what stands out in that picture and what Benito mentioned for me, and one thing I've learned and noticed, like other guests that we have who come on for specific reasons or specific topics, this is very common also with Path Scholars, that there is this sense of community that is formed by the students because of their shared experiences that may vary, but they're shared in a sense of they're all connected to the foster care system. But that sense of community, the camaraderie Benito mentioned, just the trust, the ability to feel like you're at home with people who can relate to you makes it very important in the support to find success. So thanks for having the picture up, Marina.
Yeah, it is. It's a major part of our program too. I think a lot of students will reflect on that and share that that's been one of the big pieces for them of meeting other students and, not feeling so alone. And even just being part of the program, if they're not even connecting with other students, they know that those students are there. Even some students who are not very active in PATH Scholars, just knowing that, either Dawn or myself, they have someone that they can call if something were to come up. I've heard that a ton from students. So yeah, it really varies with, depending on the student need. And yes, just another really important piece to our program.
And in my time with EOP, once PATH Scholars was in place, I learned from a lot of students, they were part of EOP, but they were also part of PATH Scholars. And EOP often became a program in their rearview mirror because PATH Scholars was so important and so much more supportive for questions and concerns and the needs that they had, that they knew EOP was there. But like I said, they kind of looked at it in a different way because PATH Scholars was the primary support for them to feel much more successful in their own ways of what that meant to them as far as success and all those things. So so let's transition to another topic or question. Benito, you mentioned a little bit about some similar shared experiences that you and some of the other guys that you've been working with and people you've met. I think it might be helpful to share when you say shared experiences of someone who comes through foster care system. What do some of those things look like? What are some of those experiences? Because you touched on transitioning into the California Youth Authority. But what are some other things that people wouldn't really understand or know about foster care youth experience?
Well, for one, there's the moving around and starting new schools and having to find new friends. And like really not wanting to unpack your stuff or make new friends or establish or get, settled in, because guess what? Like you might have to move again. And so like there's this instability that we all share for sure, that I recall also providers, some of the care providers were very caring people who really meant well. But when you have 15, guys at the house and, from all different backgrounds, all different neighborhoods, and like, gang stuff gets involved, it's not often a pleasant experience. I ran away a lot. I ran away from these situations a lot, only to be arrested again and sent to another one. And there's definitely that we can identify with and share with one another.
Right. Dawn and Marina, are there some experiences you can think of?
Well, I was just going to mention, I think something really cool that came out of, we recently did for National Foster Care Month, which is in May, we did a Conversations on Diversity, and we had a student panel, and we were so honored to have Benito on that student panel as well. There was another student who, this guy is 19 years old, and he experienced the criminal justice system, juvenile hall and all that kind of stuff. And Benito went first and kind of sharing his story. And I could really see it on the other student's face, like, oh my gosh, that guy went through something that I went through. And it was just a really cool thing to watch. I could see it on his face. He was just like, wow, I know he didn't feel alone, and he felt like, wow, somebody else understands. And there's a lot of really organic mentorship that happens very informally, I could see that student reaching out to Benito and maybe he already has, I don't know. But, you know, just to say, just to like talk and hang out and just having that bond of that shared experience, it is so incredibly powerful for our students. And so, again, it's really neat that we have the opportunity to bring these students together, that we have a place and a space for that to happen. It's really so special to be a part of.
And I was just going to say on that note, as far as shared experiences, these are things that have happened that have been traumatic or difficult in their life. And it's things that we don't really make okay to talk about in our general settings, right? It's not something you're talking about in your classroom, or if they're, you know, in a shared living experience with roommates, they're not sitting there talking to their roommates usually about these things. And so they're isolating experiences. If they're struggling with mental health relating to past trauma, or even just things that have happened in their life, there's a very limited number of people or spaces where they feel safe to share these things. And they're a huge piece of what has brought them here and what has shaped who they are. And so to hold that piece of yourself back, or those pieces of yourself back from the people that are around you, can really make you feel disconnected from the spaces that you're in. And so having a space where students can just be themselves, they don't have to explain themselves. They know that the people that are in the room have had similar things happening. And if they say something about their experiences, they know that it's going to be met with compassion and understanding. And yeah, like, I've been there too. I understand what that feels like. And so I think that can be the really important piece of a program like this, is having that connection and being able to be that part of yourself.
Great. These are all good things for listeners to hear. And Dawn, you just kind of touched on the next question. How can faculty, staff, and fellow students best support or be there for former foster youth and unaccompanied adults?
Benito?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Technical difficulties in the office here. Yeah, for me, it's everything that Dawn just said. Like, just the fact that the school and the people who work at PATH care enough to create a space for us, just for us, you know, and that's huge. And I would say for like faculty, specifically teachers, and I don't know, like, I usually wait till like half the semester's over to share my experience with my professor, because I don't want a pity grade, or, you know, I don't want to be, I don't know. I just want to be judged on my own merits, you know, for my schoolwork. But it's important, because there are some days when some students, they're reliving this trauma, or they're, you know, they're experiencing something that other students may not be experiencing. And so it's important for professors to be able to understand this and not, you know, have pity, or, but just to have concern and support for students who come from this background. That's important.
Good.
I would also add that these students are coming to us at a time where they are maybe even just coming out of these situations for the first time in their life, and, you know, on their own, and finally able to have space to breathe and to process some of the things that have happened in their life. And so that's a lot of mental and emotional work that goes into that. There's a lot of energy into that. And it's important to understand that when you're working with a student and they seem overwhelmed or they seem anxious and it doesn't resonate with what you think they should be feeling in that moment, maybe the assignments you feel are very manageable, but understanding that they may be doing some work emotionally that is causing them to feel overwhelmed or anxious. And rather than making assumptions about the way that they are showing up in class, you know, if you have someone who is sitting in the back of the class, maybe that's where they feel safest, because their back is to the wall and they feel physically safe in that space. It might not be that they're not interested or they don't want to sit at the front of the class, But that's just where they feel physically safe. If they are appearing tired or not concentrating in your class, it might not be that they are not interested. It could be that they, you know, don't have a place to sleep that night, or they don't have their basic needs met. And so always checking in before making assumptions is really important, because those moments where you say, hey, you know, I noticed you looked really tired today, can we chat in office hours, and inviting them in, because as we know, they're probably not likely to seek you out or to ask for help. They're used to doing things on their own and trying to figure it out on their own. Those might be the spaces in which you're opening up those conversations where they can say, you know, I don't have housing, or, you know, I was dealing with
the connection
now that's being triggered. I'm dealing with stuff that's triggering some of my past trauma, and I'm doing some work on that. And I just need a little bit of space this week to be able to process it. And so they might not understand that themselves, but opening those conversations can help you guide them in those directions where they're understanding why they feel so overwhelmed or why they're feeling so anxious in those moments.
Yeah, that's a great tip to help, Marina. Yeah,
that's awesome, Dawn. Thank you for sharing that piece. I think the only other thing I would add is that we touched on it a little bit in the beginning, but just about language. I think it's important for faculty to be very mindful about that. And so, you know, if they say something, whether on the syllabus or it's an assignment or something, you know, or in a lecture where they talk about family or, you know, something about your parents, I think it's important to say your parents or caregivers, you know, to use other alternative language, you know, because that can be very triggering for students. I'll never forget, one in particular, but I've heard this a lot, where a student shared with me that, you know, in their class, the assignment was something about their family and like a family tree or, you know, something to that effect. And again, that can be very triggering and not feel very safe for them to share all the, you know, dysfunction or trauma or, you know, what that looks like. And, you know, they can feel very embarrassed to then say, I was at a foster placement or several or in a group home. And so, you know, I think it's just really important to the way faculty frame different things, and just being mindful that, you know, not every student has that typical experience.
Yeah, thanks. That's very, very important for in the classroom. I wanted to add just outside of the classroom, that staff also, we have a lot of people on campus, right? And campuses that work as staff and are interacting with students in different ways, where a student may show up to a person's office and it may be the only interaction that staff member has with someone who's former foster youth, right, at the time. And not even think about the way they approach their questions or their meeting with that student. So also for staff, just be aware of when you're meeting with students, sometimes if you don't necessarily get a response or the response seems maybe, you know, something that's uncomfortable to you, it may be because the student is experiencing that moment of uncomfort because of the topic or the question you asked or whatever it is. So as staff, you know, and I was fortunate enough or have been fortunate enough for the last 20 years to be working as staff, also as faculty. So I was able to get both experiences, which not everyone gets to have. And sometimes being in the classroom adds different advantages as faculty, where students will share some things with you in one-on-one. And then sometimes as a staff member, students will share things with you in one-on-one once they feel comfortable. And I think for me, one of the biggest parts was always acknowledging and making sure to thank the person for really trusting in me to share that information, because quite often they'll even share, hey, I don't share this with just anybody. So if someone does share with you, that, you know, is quite an honor, and that they really have a sense of they can trust you in the way you have interacted with them through your time together. So.
But also, like, if, you know, if the student's reaction is, you know, frustration or even anger, I mean, you know, nobody likes to deal with someone who's angry or, you know, getting like really upset. But, you know, a lot of times that they're coming from a place of fear, like this is really scary. If they're, you know, not getting their financial aid next year, that's frightening, you know. So, of course, they're going to have a really strong reaction. And so, you know, again, just being mindful that, you know, well, in any student, I mean, sometimes, you know, we don't know if a student's in foster care or not, but just, you know, take a step back and really think about, you know, wow, what is this student really feeling right now? And being really empathetic and saying, you know, gosh, I'm really sorry that, you know, that, yeah, this looks like you're really upset. I can understand that this is scary. You know, let me help you through, you know, this situation. We can work on this together. You know, it's hard, but when you're really afraid of, you know, okay, this means that now I'm going to be homeless, or, you know, I'm not going to graduate college. I'm, you know, not going to be able to get a job. I'm going to be unemployed and homeless. You know, I mean, that's the reality. So, yeah, just a reminder for all of us to, you know, keep that in the back of our mind and just to be empathetic.
All right. Unfortunately, we're getting to that time again where time is knocking on the door and we have to go, and Benito does have to go. So Benito, thanks for joining us. It's great to meet you and have you here.
Thank you so much. It was an honor and a pleasure to be invited today, and I look forward to communicating with you guys in the future. Thank you.
Yes, for sure. Thank you very much. All right. Well, like I said, we've reached that time, and so we are into the phase of the show for recommendations. And all of these will be in the show notes. So you can go to a site or to a video or a link about a book or whatever may be on the recommendations for today. But first, of course, is the Chico State Path Scholars website. So if you're a current student at Chico State and want to learn more about joining Path Scholars, you're a prospective student coming to Chico State, or you work in higher ed in another campus somewhere and you want to see what the program is doing, you can reach out to them. And Marina and Dawn are more than excited and happy to spread the information so other campuses can be supporting students as well. And one of those things they do, I've seen as an outsider watching and seeing the benefit and the appreciation students have, is what Path Scholars calls their welcome basket for students. And the students really appreciate it in that it really sets them in the right tone. They start off their journey in higher ed that, hey, college is a place for me. So Dawn, can you speak a little bit about the welcome baskets?
Yeah, we provide welcome baskets to our incoming students. And what that looks like is a laundry basket filled with all kinds of goodies to help them as they're beginning their journey at Chico State. Their school supplies, household items like laundry detergent and dish soap and things like that, bedding, pillows, and even hygiene products. These are donated to us from other folks on campus and within our community. And it's not only something that's meeting their practical needs. We had one of our students say that they didn't think about some of those things that they might need, that they might need some laundry detergent as they were starting college. They had what they thought they needed. But a lot of our students don't come, you know, by getting set up by their parents with stuff that they need to go to college. And so they may be missing some of those items that would be helpful. It also sends a message that they, while they might not have the familial support, that they do have a family here at Chico State and they do belong, and we're here to meet their needs right from the get-go. As soon as they show up, we're here to help them feel connected to the college and to have their needs met. Great. So go ahead.
So in the show notes, we're going to have a link if you'd like to be part of that and help support that. There's a link to the Path Scholars Amazon wish list, so you can help provide some of those things for the students. All right, and your next recommendation, Dawn.
My next recommendation is a book called The Body Keeps the Score by Besser van der Kolk, MD. In the book, Dr. van der Kolk explains how trauma and its resulting stress harms us through physiological changes to the body and brain. And it's really important for faculty and staff to understand this, that in a higher ed setting, students might come to us with experiences of trauma. They may have challenges with concentration, their ability to remember and recall information. They might have anxiety or feel overwhelmed, and they might be mistrusting of building new relationships with people. And so understanding the way that their body and mind have been impacted by trauma in the past can help us shape their present and their future by helping them walk through that and connect with them in a way that is the most helpful.
Great, thank you. Those are two good recommendations. Now, Marina, do you have any to share today?
I do. I wanted to share a novel called The Language of Flowers. It's by Vanessa Diffenbaugh. And I'm just going to read just a couple of sentences about what this book is all about. So basically, this young lady spent her childhood in foster care, and she learns about flowers. And so flowers convey romantic expressions, apparently, honeysuckle for devotion, asters for patience. But she actually uses it to communicate mistrust and solitude. So it's just a really beautiful story because it's kind of tough, but she's unable to get close to anybody, but her only connection to the world is through flowers and their meanings. And so it's a beautiful story that I would definitely recommend for people to check out. I also wanted to mention a short film. It's on YouTube. It's called Removed. And it's a very powerful story about a little girl who goes through the foster care system, and it shows kind of that whole, it's 12 and a half minutes. It's not long. It just really shows how she gets, she interfaces with the foster care system and her family situation. And it's super powerful. It can be a little triggering. So be sure that, you know, you're watching it with someone, or if you're sensitive to things like that, maybe you can debrief it with someone else or watch it with someone else and then kind of process it afterwards, because it's pretty powerful.
Great. Thank you for that. So that's a few recommendations for the day. And remember, May is National Foster Care Month. I know this episode is coming out in July, so that's only 10 months away. But hopefully you can mark down your calendar for yourself. I know I thankfully remember, because that's my birth month, but also Marina was able to hand out some awesome Foster Care Month t-shirts. And so I have that to remind me as well. And then a couple of websites, we mentioned them in the where the data and the came from earlier. And one of the websites is ifoster.org. And it's one of the largest communities helping children and foster youth get access to resources and opportunities, right, to become successful and independent adults as they continue to age out of the foster system and grow as individuals. And then the other one is Children's Home Society. It is a California-based program that helps support families throughout the state working with the foster care system. They have specifically 7 offices throughout the state dedicated for programming in foster care needs and wants and support and concerns. So again, those are our recommendations, and that is our episode for the day.
But I
was about to say that, Marina says, wait, can I? So Marina.
I have one last thing to say about the donation link to the Amazon wish list. What's really cool about the Amazon list is that it's super easy. You can go on there and it ships directly to us. So you don't even have to do anything.
Ah, okay.
So we made it really easy for the donor. So if you're interested.
And if you're missing human contact and you want to bring it by in person, reach out to us and we would be happy to receive those on campus by appointment.
Excellent. All right. And so with that, that will conclude the episode. Yeah? You all give the thumbs up. We're done for the day. Okay.
Thank you, Josh.
No. Hey, thank you both so much. This has been great. And we look forward to airing it. And I know I look forward to the next episode where Teresa will be back with us. Like I've said too many times, she does a much better job at many of the things that I tried to do today. So I miss her. And
I miss her too, but you did great, Josh.
Thank you. And we will catch you on the next episode.
Thank you.
Peace out.